Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. When we consider race relations in South Dakota, we discover courageous conversations and positive actions. We also uncover misconceptions, historic wounds, and ongoing traumas. Today, we bring you something from the first category. The Rapid City Circle of Friends is a group of self-described ambassadors, Native and non-Native. They're funded by a Bush Foundation Community Innovation Grant. They work together to lead a community, bridging cultures, educating themselves and others, advocating, and modeling the behavior they want to see. As we consider race relations in South Dakota, sitting down, having a long, patient conversation is one place to begin. We invited Karen Mortimer, Marnie Herman, and Whitney Rencounter into the SDPB studios in Rapid City to talk about relations between Natives and non-Natives in South Dakota and ways to move that conversation forward. In the interest of full disclosure, Karen Mortimer is a member of the Friends of Public Broadcasting. The first voice you'll hear here is Whitney Rencounter, telling me how to pronounce the name of the organization in Lakota.
The pronunciation is Mini Luzaha Okola Kichiapi.
So let's start with you, Karen, and take me back a little bit and give me some history about this group and how it started.
Okay, well, about 2 years ago, we wrote a grant to the Bush Foundation, and we received a grant as a Bush Community Innovation Grant. And the problem that we're addressing is the lack of or broken relationships between Natives and the Native and non-Native community in Rapid City.
It takes guts to sort of say that's what we're going to address, yes?
Yes, it does, but it's really important to say it out loud and put it right in front of our work.
All right, so what happened next? How did you think of sort of organizing and applying for a grant that would attract the Bush Foundation in a way that would seem like some progress was possible?
Well, the approach that we were taking was to create a group, a cohort of Native and non-Native leaders in our community, and it's about half and half, which is, we believe, really critical to the work, and we've maintained that as a standard throughout our work. An example is Marnie and Whitney are spokespersons, and they represent a Native and non-Native viewpoint, which is really critical. And to be honest, our work began with a learning experience where we came together to learn about the history and place of Rapids of the Native community in Western South Dakota. And we found that one of the most important aspects of our work is to develop relationships with one another while we're learning together. So this critical relationship building has created a network and some initiatives that are moving forward, and we're starting to see some great results.
Karen, what kind of mindset do you need to bring into the process of building relationships?
I think it has to be really intentional. I spent probably about 6 months working to develop this cohort, and it's really incredible the positive intention that each and every person who joined this work had. Everyone wanted to learn and identified the need for this work, and I think that's the critical intentionality of wanting to address this and being willing to work with others seems to be part of the key. Not the key, but a part of the key.
Whitney, I'd like to bring you into the conversation. Tell me how you sort of became involved with this group.
Sure. Karen approached me and asked me to help out. She was referred and asked me to utilize my graphic art skills, and she wanted to have me do a logo for the group. And so we sat down and we talked about what we would like this logo to incorporate, And from there, as we were having discussions on what the focus of this grant was, I think what hit me was when Karen talked about that there was a lack of Native American teachers and educators in the school district here in Rapid City. And along with that, also in the community, a really lack of Native leadership, guidance, and in a city where we have a big population of Native Americans. We have, you know, 8,000 plus Native Americans that live in our city. And the school district has a really high Native American population. I think at the time when we started the grant, you know, we started to see that the dropout rate for Native American students in the school district was finally improving after many years of really having a high dropout rate for Native American students. So that really involved my thoughts and efforts running a Ateapi youth program here in Rapid City, where we focus on working with students of non-Native and Native backgrounds, and really hoping to create a environment that's very well-rounded, and to help all students to understand more about the Native American culture. So it aligned right with what I was already doing, and so I was excited to be part of the process.
Whitney, how about for you? Does the notion of building relationships between Native and non-Native people feel daunting, or does it feel hopeful? What sort of emotions does it bring up for you?
Well, as a Native growing up here in South Dakota, my only experience, obviously, was the experience that I had in the towns that were close to my reservation, and also other towns, we call them border towns, that are really kind of up against the reservation. And many times you'll see a division, a really big division between reservations and the towns that are right outside the reservation. And Rapid City, matter of fact, is kind of just outside of Pine Ridge. So it kind of fits that mold. You know, so I think coming into this grant, I knew, I think I talked to Karen and I said back when Martin Luther King crossed the bridge at Selma, it was successful in the end because it was Native, or excuse me, African Americans working together with African Americans in the civil rights movement that made it successful. And so we said we have an opportunity by bringing Native American leaders in our city together with non-Native leaders, and we had an opportunity to do something great.
Whitney, I'm wondering if you would tell me what that looks like, that division between reservation and border town. Can you give me a specific example or paint that picture for me a little?
Absolutely. You know, it was back, you know, in the 50s that I remember some of the towns here in South Dakota that used to have city ordinances where if there was more than three Indians walking down the street, they were considered a war party, or there was actually ordinance in the city that you could not do business with Native Americans back in the 50s and, you know, around that time frame. And so I think without getting folks together and hashing out those differences, doing the hard work that it takes to learn about each other, spend time with each other, and get to the root of why don't we accept each other? Why is this division here? And I think many of our towns in South Dakota really do not have that happening. And with the Minnelusaha Okola Kichiapi Ambassador Group, this is probably the first time that something like this is happening, where we are spending time together, learning about each other, helping to understand why the divisions are there, especially with the Black Hills formerly being a treaty territory and then later becoming a place jumping with gold and the opportunities that came with that. And this is the first time that I've ever experienced and been a part of something where we're doing some hard work, we're getting in there, we're talking about the truths, and finding ways to say, hey, let's work together towards some common goals, and really repair that relationship that really never has got a chance to develop once westward expansion happened.
Marnie, give me a little bit of your background.
Well, I was invited to be a part of the bus trip largely because of my role at the time of being the incoming chairwoman of the board of directors for the Rapid City Area Chamber of Commerce.
So we should say the bus trip is the Lakota Lands and Identities, Karen's bus trip, right?
Yeah, correct. It was a terrific program, and I feel really fortunate to have been invited to attend.
It starts there on that bus for you. How come?
Well, it felt like it was a role I needed to play as a representative of the business community in that role as the chamber board chair. Felt duty bound to do that. I was extremely curious about what we were going to have the opportunity to learn, and the time was available. I also knew a lot of the other people who were going to be on that trip and was eager to spend time with them. Didn't really know really what was going to unfold, but was really interested in learning and finding out. So then after the trip, which honestly I thought, well, that's going to be it. We'll shake hands and hug and say goodbye, and then off we go. Then there were opportunities for further engagement that Karen brought forward, and I was glad to be able to participate in those. And those opportunities included both the opportunity to kind of, look, how does what we've accomplished as a group and in the relationship building framework, how do we grow from there and make those relationships useful going forward? And then how can we use our connections within the community to get some things done to advance all of the ideas that we had talked about and learned about? So, for example, having a seat at the table with the Chamber of Commerce Board, and which is connected to the Convention and Visitors Bureau, gives you access to people who get things done, who put signs up and who create events and who promote the city and who welcome people into the city. And so, how can we do a better job of welcoming everybody and branding the city, if you will, as a place that's welcoming to everyone?
You're listening to an extended conversation with representatives from the Rapid City Circle of Friends. We'll continue that conversation after the break. Stay in the moment, SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's get back to our conversation with representatives from the Rapid City Circle of Friends. I caught up with Karen Mortimer, Marnie Herman, and Whitney Rencounter. The group focuses on speaking the truth, building relationships, and taking positive action. We enter the conversation again by talking about those relationships and the unexpected richness of how they develop. You'll hear Karen Mortimer first.
We have definitely have developed relationships that are growing and sustaining and growing, which is exciting. And because most of the people are leaders in some sector or have influence in some sector, I think we hope for some systemic change through that leadership and engagement. You can hang your hat on events and things that we've helped support or champion or develop, but those are things that we have done, and we can be proud of those and happy about those. But the real work is our sustained kind of place in the community where people can come to us or we can go to them, and we can bridge culture. We have a acronym called BEAM, and it's bridging cultures, educating ourselves and others, advocacy, and modeling respectful behaviors, which we feel are all really key pieces of our work. So the real work going forward is to BEAM, and
Did that come from the group itself, Karen?
It did. We're going to all give Marnie Herman credit for that acronym. And we all are very clear about those four aspects of our work.
Yeah. Whitney, I'm really intrigued by what you said about developing relationships that never developed over history because of the gold rush, because of the treaty, because of the way the American military, the American government interacted with the tribes. Do those individual relationships then between individual people sort of spread out to more institutional relationships in your mind?
You know, I think how I view it is the fact that as a country, how things were founded, things weren't really thought through. It was coming to America from Great Britain and, you know, Columbus. And when everyone came to the shores of America, you know, I think the folks came with the intention of wanting to learn and understand what it is to be Native American. And we have 560 plus tribes. For the most part, one thing we all have in common is we have a great respect, even for our enemy tribes or for somebody that you have competition against. There's always been a respect amongst tribes, and it was one of the most honorable things to do was counting coup on your enemy. Not to kill an enemy, but to count coup on them, meaning you go up to that enemy with your staff and you knock them off their horse. Or you touch them with your staff, and then you go away back to amongst your side of the battle. And that was the most honorable, that was the highest deed of a Native American back then. And but when Great Britain expanded, and when, you know, obviously the break off from Great Britain took place, it was done more in the ideology of individualistic, attain wealth, and that was kind of driven behind what happened. And that's almost the opposite of our culture. The Native peoples, we believe we were put on this earth to take care of our surroundings, to protect each other and take care of what the natural resources that we have. And so naturally, if you have those two different ideas, there is going to be some friction. There is going to be kind of a misunderstanding there. But I think throughout our history, we finally have started to come to a point after all the periods of termination and such. We finally come to a self-determination era where freedom of religion is passed and kind of more accepting and understanding and being more politically correct and really changing our societies, where we now understand through all these changes that took place in our history, we now have to be more careful on what we say on social media, all these different things and that have changed throughout our history. We've really, I believe, have become a better society in terms of respecting all cultures, respecting each other, and taking time to learn about your neighbor and kind of growing from those experiences.
Karen, let's talk a little bit about common goals. And what are some of the things that sort of rose to the top in early discussions of things that you would like to do together?
Well, we have several current goals that we're working toward, and it kind of relates back to BEAM, where we're bridging cultures and educating ourselves and others, and of course advocating and modeling respectful behaviors. But we're doing things such as some educational forums in the community, bringing people to the reservation if they've never. Lots of people in Rapid City have never been to the reservation. They don't have Native friends.
So what do they do when they go there?
What's the
you go to the reservation, you don't want to be a tourist and look around somebody else's town, right? Or do you? I don't know. What's the objective of going to the reservation, and how do you do it respectfully and open-mindedly?
Well, we took two specific tours this summer that really were meaningful. One was to the Lakota Wachipi, the powwow.
Oglala Lakota Nation.
Oglala Lakota Nation powwow. And it's really different than the powwow here in Rapid City. It's outdoors, it's intimate, it's celebratory, and pretty amazing. And so that, I think that was really interesting for the people who went. Another trip that we took, we spent a day with a medicine man, a spiritual leader, and he told stories, he shared his spirituality with us, he shared history with us. It was probably one of the more meaningful days of my historical trip through the Native American culture.
How come? And what did you, was it the sort of intangible experience you can't describe, or was there something you had learned that you didn't know before? What was it about that?
Probably both, Laurie. It was, I'd been to the reservation, but I had never met and spent time with a spiritual leader.
Sure.
And he was absolutely incredible. It's intangible, hard to put into words.
Sure.
But I learned things about the pipe, about the Sundance. We visited the Sundance grounds. It was not during a Sundance, but we visited the grounds, and he explained things. And it's hard to believe that the richness of spirituality happened so close to us and we didn't even know.
Marnie, what are some of the experiences that you've had that are intangible and memorable, such as what Karen just described?
Well, I was lucky enough to go to both the powwow and also to spend the day with the medicine man, the spiritual leader, and to go to the Sundance grounds. So almost all of what I learned on the day that we spent with the spiritual leader was new information, really just things that we just didn't have any knowledge about. And honestly then learned that a lot of the spiritual practices and the rituals were forbidden for many years. And so it's kind of no wonder that we didn't know about them outside of, you know, if you weren't from the reservation, weren't Native, there's really no opportunity that you would have had to learn about that.
Is that what you're trying to change, sort of the opportunity to engage in each other's cultures in ways that haven't occurred before?
That's a component. Not everybody is going to be interested in learning about cultural issues. There's a lot of things that vie for attention out there. But what we can help with is, again, relationship building and just getting to know each other on a human level, person to person. What do we have in common? And, you know, make those connections that way and focus on what we have in common. And from that, you can build on learning about what you have that's not in common and that what makes each of us interesting in our own ways. And then you just get to know and to love a whole new group of people. And I mean, I think that's really what it's all about, is just getting to know people as human beings.
Whitney, what is that experience like to sort of invite someone into part of your culture that you're not sure how they were going to respond to?
You know, I think for myself, growing up in a home where my grandparents and my mother and my family for that matter, really have done a good job of relaying the importance of understanding who we are. And in my case, growing up on the Crow Creek Reservation as a young Dakota, you know, I didn't really understand, you know, why my culture wasn't celebrated in mainstream society, why my culture wasn't accepted in the border towns. But I did notice when I was sitting there, my grandfather would be watching the old Western movies, and when he would watch those movies, you know, the John Wayne movies, all of a sudden you would hear a drum beat. And then next thing you know it, here came the Indians, and John Wayne and the rest of the crew would either flee or get ready for battle. And so I think if we just allow mainstream media and the movies to educate us, we really miss out on what traditional Lakota, Dakota, Nakota, and all the cultures, what the true culture means and what it represents. Where, you know, so they always talk about those movies, they painted the drumbeat as something to be afraid of. And so the world is afraid of the drumbeat when they hear the Indians coming. But in reality, and Karen and the rest of the group got to learn this when we went to the powwow, when you hear the drum, it represents the heartbeat of your mother, represents the heartbeat of Mother Earth. And when a baby's in that mother's womb, they hear that heartbeat. And so when you hear that drum, that's what that replication represents. And so there's so many misunderstandings out there. And a lot of that was painted through the films and through the mainstream media that we, that for myself, I believe that if we took the time to truly teach and took the time to not force our culture on other people, but just give folks a chance to learn about the stuff they never got a chance to learn about, or maybe they never had an opportunity to learn about another culture, especially our culture, where it's been so misrepresented throughout our history, that once folks get down to the basis of what our culture represents and what it means, that we feel that most will have a certain respect. And it doesn't mean that you're going to become Lakota or Dakota, but it's just, in essence, it's more about the values and traditions of how we carry ourselves, which is almost opposite of what mainstream media and the Hollywood movies painted it out to be.
Karen, we're talking about taking the time to learn something in the midst of a society that is ever accelerating. Have you noticed that to be a challenge as well, just sort of getting people to pause or slow down or schedule a trip or have a conversation that's, you know, patient like the one we're having right now? Has that been a challenge for anybody?
Well, I think that because we are moving quickly, I was probably one of the very, very impressed the fact that this cohort of leaders would take 5 days out of their very, very busy lives to begin learning. And after that, I thought, well, I don't know. Will we continue to be able to come together and learn together and develop those relationships? And not everyone has stayed with the group, but a great deal, probably 2/3 of the group have stayed together and are participating in some way. And so they're making a choice. And apparently this is important to a group of people, and I think it's really important to Rapid City.
You're listening to representatives from Rapid City Circle of Friends. They're a group funded by a Bush Foundation Community Innovation Grant. They look at relationships between natives and non-natives. This hour, we're talking with Karen Mortimer, Marnie Herman, and Whitney Rencounter. We'll continue the conversation after a break. Stay in the moment, SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today, we're taking time to talk about relationships between Native and non-Native South Dakotans. These are the kind of conversations that shouldn't be rushed, so we took our time. We thank you for taking the time with us. I sat down with Karen Mortimer, Marnie Herman, and Whitney Rencounter. They're members of a group called the Rapid City Circle of Friends. Their mission is to bridge cultures, educate themselves and others, advocate, and model behavior they want to see. Let's get back to that conversation. This time, we hear first from Marnie Herman. Marnie, throughout this experience, has it changed the way you look at your own background, your own cultural roots at all?
I wouldn't say that I look at my own background or my own cultural roots differently. I just grew up as a regular kid in different parts of the country. So I don't really look back, but I certainly look forward and use what the new learnings and the new relationships in everyday decision making, both in my personal life and in my business life, and hope to make things better going forward.
Karen, do you want to talk about the Rapid City Indian School lands sort of conversation there? Do you want to go in that direction?
I'd love to just share a little bit and kind of give a teaser, because we're going to be working on this going forward. There's a segment of land, about 1,200 acres on the west side of Rapid City, that were originally the Rapid City Indian School, which very few people in Rapid City know about. And that chunk of land is right in the middle of West Rapid City. The history behind that land is rich, complicated, and it's a complicated issue. I don't think we have enough time today mm-hmm. to get into all the ramifications, but there was some. It moved from the Indian school land to a sanatorium. It was owned by the Department of Interior and ultimately the tribes. And in 1948, that land was moved into by the federal government. It was given to Rapid City, to the National Guard, to some churches, and the schools. And so the story behind that, and who's in that property right now is really current and interesting to Rapid City. So when we think about the long and rich history of the Native Americans in the Black Hills, sometimes that, you know, the treaties and some of the history that happened, oftentimes we know it up till about the 70s. But this brings this right to today and makes history relevant. And it's also a sort of metaphorical for the whole historical process. So we are studying this. There's been a lot of research. We are going to be sponsoring a community forum late February, early March, and we're hoping to get this very carefully researched information into the hands of the public. Mm. Exciting stuff.
We'll follow up with you as that comes closer. I think we would be remiss if we didn't go to downtown Rapid City and address the latest information this week. Last week, Mayor Steve Allender made some comments that were quoted in the Rapid City Journal. He has since called them sloppy arrangement of words and sort of taken ownership of them, as I understand it. Whitney, let's start with you and tell me first, when you first heard or read about what the mayor had said, and he's talking about problems with homelessness in downtown, and I won't repeat what he said word for word, but basically he laid it at the feet of Native Americans. When you first heard that, what was your response?
Well, you know, I think the last few years during our work with the MOA, you know, the mayor has been involved in some of our functions of, like we had a really successful red carpet welcome event, and I'm on the Rapid City Visitors Convention and Visitors Bureau Board of Directors as well. So myself, Karen, and the mayor, you know, and the board of directors, as well as many, the chief of police, and there's many of us that are involved in making a difference in our city, not only with the MOA work, but just in general, to do some healing, to do some connecting, to do some bridge building, and really making Rapid City a leader in diversity and helping to create opportunities for everyone. And we feel like when these things take place, we get to know each other, and it just becomes a great community for all of us. And Mayor has been involved in that process. And so when these words came out, we felt like there was something kind of missing there that that the public really didn't get a chance to see and wonder, and I guess really realize why these comments came out as they did. And then once we kind of learned about there was a city, you know, city board meeting, or excuse me, a city council meeting, and there was some business owners basically relaying some information to, you know, the city council, and angry, kind of in an anger mode, and then so the mayor responded without really taking time to think about it, and later on, come to find out, some of the information wasn't completely relayed in complete facts and truths, and so the fact that the mayor really didn't wait for that to calm down and attain all the right facts, and maybe he did think he retained all the right facts, but to me, the really to me, I always say the Creator helps us in mysterious ways. The fact that the facts came out and that were not completely correct really helped the mayor to realize, okay, maybe I said some things I shouldn't have. What can I do to really relay clearly what I wanted to? So, you know, by doing that, we were able to kind of get to the understanding that there's a better way to communicate. And sometimes if you're angry, don't say too much stuff and wait till you get all the facts and calm down. And, you know, good things will happen.
Karen, is a situation like this an opportunity or a setback?
I look at it as opportunity. I'm not sure this would have happened a couple of years ago, that we would have been able to identify that this was a problem that we needed to address as a community. This comment was at first viewed as a problem, and then we, as Whitney said, we determined that we weren't sure that the mayor really meant what he said. So we called him up and asked if we could come in and visit with him, and he was able to clarify, and we had a wonderful discussion. And he's a man with a good heart and really wants to make Rapid City move ahead. I'd like Marnie to talk a little bit about her take on this and how she took the conversation even further. It was a true ambassadorship.
So we did have the opportunity to actually act as ambassadors after our discussions with the mayor, and he did an excellent job of really explaining the context that this that the newspaper interview took place in. It was a lot of high emotion. A lot of frustration, just a lot of things going on. And the timing of the interview with the Journal was unfortunate. And to Whitney's point about, you know, all the facts really weren't in, and there was just a lot going on. And the mayor, those of us, everybody, you know, in the room today and others who know him well, know that he's, you know, a pretty direct, or speaks in direct terms. And I know that sometimes that doesn't translate very well into print and can come off being pretty darn just blunt and impolitic, you know, not what we're used to hearing necessarily from politicians. So between having that understanding of the mayor, his actions, I mean, those are the things that ultimately I hope we're all judged by, our actions. And he's just, he and others within the city council have just demonstrated excellent leadership and excellent partnership with all the work that we've been doing. But the same evening, or the same day following our afternoon conversation with the mayor, where he had a chance to explain what was really on in his heart and in his mind with respect to the issues going on downtown. I had a meeting with a lot of current and former business leaders for a few hours, and was able to communicate that, yes, indeed, we had visited with the mayor, and, you know, this is an issue on a lot of people's minds. It was a major topic of conversation, and just to be able to share our conversation from earlier in the day, truly be an ambassador, communicating, you know, bridging and communicating. You know, here's what was said, here's some of the context, here's what how he would prefer to have phrased it had he been given, you know, a chance to rephrase those comments, but really emphasize that the mayor, the chief of police, and everyone in, you know, law enforcement and in city leadership cares deeply about the people in their community, and especially cares about those who are most vulnerable, and for those that are disproportionately impacted by poverty and homelessness and all that goes, and then all that goes with that.
Laurie, I have one more comment about that.
Yes.
If I could add,
please.
One of the things, sort of a piece about the MOA work and how this was a way to really kind of be able to be ambassadors, as Marnie talked about. In the reporting, it pointed out that this was a Native American problem. And as Marnie said, there were overrepresentation of Native Americans within the context of panhandling in this case. This is absolutely true. But this is a community problem. It's something we all need to work on. And it was really a great conversation that we had with the mayor and later with the police chief about how this is a community problem that together we need to work on. And so it's an example of Native, non-Native people working together to address issues.
Whitney, change happens at the speed of trust. I'm reading that from MOA material. Change happens at the speed of trust. Explain that to me.
Well, it's just human nature that you're more than likely going to be influenced by someone that you've spent time and developed a relationship with and trust. You know, that's just human nature, and that's important. Trust is, I think, a virtue and value amongst all cultures and all people. I mean, that's the basis of, you know, when we're born into this world, you don't even think about if your mom and dad are someone you can trust. It's just a natural instinct. And so I think one of the successes that MOA has really exemplified is the fact that when we spent those 5 days together on the bus and have done all the advocacy in our community and have gotten together and really talked about the things that really haven't had a chance to talk about, we've started to gain trust within ourselves, within our group. And, you know, instead of seeing someone as a stranger, I think to me it's almost, if you see a stranger of your own culture, it's a little easier because you know you have some connections there already. But if you see a stranger across cultures in a different race, there's even a more, I would say, a cautious approach to see if you can trust that individual. And I think MOA has really shown the capabilities to, when we come together now as a group, and I would say even myself as a Native you know, leader in the community, when I see folks that I might have seen before that are non-Native, now I realize for the most part that we as people, even though we have disagreements, we mean well, and we all have that within us to want to do the right things and to see good things in our community. And so that for me has helping me take a step, and I'm sure many in the community to take a step that if we trust each other, good things will happen, and that's happening.
That's Karen Mortimer, Marnie Herman, and Whitney Rencounter with Rapid City Circle of Friends. They gathered in the SDPB studios in Rapid City. We were hoping to have a relaxed and thoughtful conversation about race relations, about culture, about language, and about relationships. Part of learning and relationship building is linguistic. I can't pronounce the name of the group in Lakota yet, so here is Whitney Rencounter helping me out.
Mini Luzaha Okola Kichiapi Ambassadors. Mini Luzaha is a Lakota word that talks about rapid waters. And Okola Kichiapi talks about a group of friends, a group of individuals that work together. So Mini Luzaha Okola Kichiapi is, in English, Rapid City Circle of Friends.
I'll keep practicing. Special thanks to China Lockett and Kenzie Wagner for their help in Rapid City that day, Steve Munson in Vermilion for helping us make all those necessary connections to make that conversation happen. If there's conversations you'd like to hear, you can send us an email in the moment at sdpb.org or text us at 605-956-7372. That's 605-956-SDPB.